Last month, as I thought about Memorial Day this year, and I searched my physical pages and I looked on the internet, I found an essay, and I keep going back to it and reading it, and it's formed my ideas about, but I decided, really, you just need to hear it. It's from the Cape Cod Times. It's called Saluting My Family Ghosts on Memorial Day. It was written in 2018 by Larry Brown. I grew up knowing my ancestors fought in the Revolutionary War. I could have joined the Sons of Revolution, but somehow I never felt a need to. In the 1960s, I joined a Naval Reserve Officer program and went for basic training at the Great Lakes Naval Training Center outside Chicago. It was winter, and the cold wind blew right through our pea coats. Being on an officer track, I was appointed company officer, reporting to a chief petty officer. For no reason that made any sense, I was given a sword to wear on my hip. On the first Sunday there, we were ordered out of our racks to attend the chapel service of our choice, Catholic, Protestant, Jewish. There, I heard the shortest sermon of my life, and I'm about to break a rule here. I don't swear from the sermon, from the pulpit, but I'm gonna. I heard the shortest sermon of my life. Remember, barked the chaplain, your soul may belong to God, but your ass belongs to the United States Navy. And don't you forget it. We had a little fellow in our unit who instantly became the company mascot. We called him Admiral Zippy. One afternoon, we were marching in formation, and someone asked me about the sword and if I'd ever tried fencing. Does it hurt if you get hit? Does it hurt, piped up Admiral Zippy. Didn't your old man ever beat you with a wire coat hanger? A long silence hung in the air over our tramping feet. Geez, Zip, someone said. This is to remember that for some of us, war would only be the continuation of a violence they had already known. When I was a boy, there was a closet on the third floor where my father's army clothing from World War II was stored. I used to put those uniforms on until I grew too tall. One time, my father came home from work to find me totally decked out in army attire. He saw me and turned white as a sheet. He said he'd rather see me go to Canada than disappear down the long gullet of the Vietnam War. It turned into an argument between my parents, as things often did. My mother, much as she loved me, would have rather seen me dead than live as a coward. Then one afternoon at my Naval Reserve base, my company commander called me into his office and grimly handed me a phone. On the other end was my aunt's voice, wailing that her only son had died in Vietnam. They got Paul. They got Paul, she said. For the rest of my life, that voice has been my personal sound of war. When the draft board called his number, my aunt offered to pull some strings, but Paul said no. His training was so desultory, his only opportunity to shoot the rifle with which he'd defend his life was a few rounds fired into the waves from a rail of his troop transport. My mother urged me to write my aunt some kind of letter. You write so beautifully, she said. I agonized for months before finally confessing to my aunt that I believed the war to which she had given her only son would prove unworthy of any of the fathers, sons, and brothers who would die there. I begged her to search his life for meaning, and hers too, but not his death. Immediately after mailing it, I repented. But later, I learned my aunt kept the letter in her safety deposit box. A folded flag, she wrote, is a poor substitute for a son who held such promise. Ben, my father-in-law, drove a landing craft onto Omaha Beach in Normandy, out and back, bringing in the troops. By war's end, he returned to his wife and parents, and he played with toy soldiers on the floor. For a time, they thought they'd lost him for good. We pay as dear a price for good wars as for bad. Now we have so few families in America who send their children into battle, who dread the day when two uniformed men will come marching up their sidewalks. If they die, they will die as individuals, one at a time. And so it is, as individuals, that we must love them. If we love the idea of war more, then we do them dishonor. We must never again ask our children to die unnecessarily. William Shakespeare imagined British troops the night before the Battle of Agincourt, huddled around their fires. And a Shakespearean quote, "If the cause be not be good, says one, if these men do not die well, it will be a black matter for the king that led them to it." So I've been reflecting on that for a few weeks. And I pulled up my old copy of Chris Hedges' book, War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning. The book was recommended to me when I had first landed in Elkhart by a pacifist Mennonite. We'll hear about it throughout my sermon. War is an entity all its own. Laying wreaths at soldiers' graves shares the commonality of marking another life claimed by whichever war fought in different places at different times, but the common cause of these deaths is war. War dead also include the civilians who are in the place that got bombed, those who die of illness, injury, and disease, who are denied medical help because of diminished capacity for care during wartime, those family members who die younger, sooner than expected because of grief, and the list goes on. War leaves ghosts of not just soldiers. This has always been the case, from ancient wars to our own current illegal war in Iran. Chris Hedges wrote the small but powerful book, War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning. After years of covering wars as a journalist and writer, he says, "War makes the world understandable, a black and white tableau of them and us. It suspends thought, especially self-critical thought. All bow before the supreme effort. We are one. Most of us willingly accept war as long as we can fold it into a belief system that paints the ensuing suffering as necessary for a higher good, for human beings seed not only happiness, human beings need not only happiness, but also meaning. And tragically, war is sometimes the most powerful way in human society to achieve meaning." It's the end of his quote. It makes me think of the ghosts around here. This area has been through the American Revolution and all wars since. All those ghosts. What do they wish we were doing with our lives? What lessons do they wish we had learned? We all go through life hoping that our life made a difference, some positive change, and that we mattered. What if those killed in war? Every life is important, but do they feel that their death mattered? Another Chris Hedges quote. "The enduring attraction of war is this: even with its destruction and carnage, it can give us what we long for in life. It can give us purpose, meaning, a reason for living. Only when we are in the midst of conflict does the shallowness and vapidness of much of our lives become apparent. Trivia dominates our conversations and increasingly our airwaves." This was written in 96. "And war is an enticing elixir. It gives us resolve, a cause. It allows us to be noble. And those who have the least meaning in their lives, such as the impoverished refugees in Gaza, the disenfranchised North African immigrants in France, even the legions of young who live in the splendid indolence and safety of the industrialized world, are all susceptible to war's appeal." End quote. The American Civil War ended May 26, 1965, 1865, but the seeds had already been sown for a modern Memorial Day before war's end. On May 1st of 1865, in Charleston, South Carolina, freed slaves decorated the unmarked graves of Union soldiers who died in a Confederate prison camp. The actual people who had been owned as chattel were so grateful to the fallen white Union soldiers fighting to end slavery that they honored them as best they could. Word spread of this ritual and its meaning, and by the next year, when the war had ended, many towns were observing Decoration Day to mark the graves of fallen soldiers. By 1868, it was a federal holiday, later determined to be observed on the last Monday in May, and it stretched to include soldiers killed during any of our wars. Over the years, sticklers for details will remind us that it is to honor those in military who died during battle. Of course, being human, we've taken that meaning and we have shifted, expanded, molded, and moved those boundaries so that Memorial Day is a time for many people to remember loved ones who died, in whatever manner, military or not. Decoration Day, leaving flowers on graves and thinking about those dear to us, is a somber but peaceful way to live with our ghosts. Living with ghosts also means living with ideas that are dead but still haunting us. Memorial Day was begun by freed slaves who were some of the exact people that the South intended to keep owning as subhuman. 150 years later, that would be now, people in our government are trying to resurrect that kind of lifestyle, removing rights of voters that were hard won 60 years ago, narrowing the personal agency of women, deporting people of color, blatantly disregarding our Constitution. The Civil War was fought over money, like most wars are, but specifically in that particular war, the economy in question was money made by wealthy slave owners who were benefiting from having successfully sold the idea that some people are not fully people. Slavery was such a lie. People are people and are not to be owned. Slavery is still a lie, even in its different current forms. This town is quiet at night. It's beautiful. I get to live next door and look at the steeple with the stars behind it. It's beautiful. I imagine what this peninsula was like in the 1860s. I'm intrigued by the phrase, fight for my country. How many 18-year-olds in rural Maine had ever seen a slave or a person of color? How many of them had met one? Did they understand the reality of what they were fighting for? To literally give back to humans the God-given right our nation denied them? I hope they did. Because those who had it in their bones to perpetuate the system of slavery absolutely fought to keep that way of life. They knew what they were fighting for. Those Union soldiers were fighting their Southern kin for the very heart of this nation. Our local troops did not need to actually experience Southern culture to know how vicious slavery is. From Hedges, I learned early on that war forms its own culture. The rush of battle is a potent and often lethal addiction, for war is a drug, one I ingested for many years. It is peddled by mythmakers, historians, war correspondents, filmmakers, novelists, and the state, all of whom endow it with qualities it often does possess: excitement, exoticism, power, chances to rise above our small station in life, and a bizarre and fantastic universe that has a grotesque and dark beauty. It dominates culture, distorts memory, corrupts language, and infects everything around it, even humor, which becomes preoccupied with the grim perversities of smut and death. Fundamental questions about the meaning or meaninglessness of our place on the planet are laid bare when we watch those around us sink to the lowest depths. War exposes the capacity for evil that lurks not far below the surface within all of us. And this is why, for many, war is so hard to discuss once it's over. End quote. We cover the gravestones with flowers, we say meaningful words, and we speak of honor and sacrifice. War is still in charge, though. So many people have died from the multiple causes of wartime death that we must keep up the appearance of war being meaningful until there is a bigger force to give us meaning. Today, on this Memorial Day, I share a possibility for a force in our real lives whose growth could overpower war's force, and it's love. And I'm not the only one who thinks so. I did some proof texting, and I found out that Chris Hedges himself believes that too. He said, "To survive as a human being is possible only through love. And when Thanatos is ascendant, that means when death is everywhere, the instinct must be to reach out to those we love, to see in them all the divinity, pity, and pathos of the human, and to recognize love in the lives of others, even those with whom we are in conflict, love that is like our own. It does not mean we will avoid war or death. It does not mean that we as distinct individuals will survive. But love, in its mystery, has its own power. It alone gives us meaning that endures. It alone allows us to embrace and cherish life. Love as power, both to resist in our nature what we know we must resist, and to affirm what we know we must affirm. And love, as the poets remind us, is eternal." With thanks to these wonderful writers, and gratitude and honor for all who have served and do serve, so my sermon ends.